Welcome to We Are Libertarians. My name is Creighton Harrington. Across from me is Chris Spangle, and to his right, my left, is Chris Galt.
Hey, Creighton.
Thank you. This is a weekly podcast over various issues, current events, philosophy, and such from the perspective of young libertarians. First up on the agenda is, I'm hesitant to say that we might talk about the idiot of the week already, but I think we'll probably have somebody else in mind. President Obama is in the news. He's had a pretty fun week.
He's pretty out of control. He just can't keep it to himself.
Yeah, it's been a fun week for President Obama. I guess the first comment we can talk about is his. I don't know if it's. I mean, I guess that's a question I can ask. He made a comment that the Supreme Court should not be able to overturn laws that Congress passes because they're an unelected body. And, of course, this flips basically 200 and something years of judicial review on top of its head. But I guess my first question coming out of this is, do you think that he was serious, or do you think he's just playing politics?
I actually can let's try something. You guys won't be able to hear it, but let's play it for our listeners. I can actually play the video of him speaking, so that way, if you're listening and you haven't heard it, you know exactly what's going on. So here is Barack Obama talking about the Supreme Court.
Be confident that the Supreme Court will uphold the law. And the reason is because in accordance with precedent out there, it's constitutional. That's not just my opinion, by the way. That's the opinion of legal experts across the ideological spectrum, including two very conservative appellate court justices that said this wasn't even a close case. I think it's important, because I watched some of the commentary last week, to remind people that this is not an abstract argument. People's lives are affected by the lack of availability of health care, the inaffordability of health care, their inability to get health care because of pre-existing conditions. The law that's already in place has already given 2.5 million young people health care that wouldn't otherwise have it. There are tens of thousands of adults with pre-existing conditions who have health care right now because of this law. Parents don't have to worry about their children not being able to get health care because they can't be prevented from getting health care as a consequence of a pre-existing condition. That's part of this law. Millions of seniors are paying less for prescription drugs because of this law. Americans all across the country have greater rights and protections with respect to their insurance companies and are getting preventive care because of this law. So that's just the part that's already been implemented. That doesn't even speak to the 30 million people who stand to gain coverage once it's fully implemented in 2014. And I think it's important. I think the American people understand, and I think the justices should understand that in the absence of an individual mandate, you cannot have a mechanism to ensure that people with pre-existing conditions can actually get health care. So there's not only a economic element to this and a legal element to this, but there's a human element to this. And I hope that's not forgotten in this political debate. Ultimately, I'm confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. And I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we've heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or a lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Well, there's a good example, and I'm pretty confident that this this court will recognize that and not take that step.
So that is President Obama talking about the fact that the Supreme Court is unelected and they are a conservative Supreme Court, and conservatives love to scream about judicial activism. So don't overturn a decision that was made by a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress. Meanwhile, they are currently fighting in court. And I think it's somewhere in the Northeast. They're fighting in the courts to uphold their decision not to uphold DOMA anymore, saying that DOMA is unconstitutional and that the federal government shouldn't be forced to enforce that. And that was put in place by a Republican Congress and a Republican president. And obviously the three of us, I would assume the three of us don't agree with DOMA, although there may be some Ron Paul followers who agree with Ron Paul on DOMA. But, you know, this is something that happens all the time. The Supreme Court, they're there to rule what's constitutional and unconstitutional. And he basically said, you know, the individual mandate that you have to pay, without that, the entire healthcare falls, the entire healthcare bill falls apart. So what do you guys think about a president criticizing the judicial branch and kind of giving a shot to the Supreme Court before they've even made a decision, trying to persuade their decision in the media, Crichton?
I mean, it's just – I think it's just dumb. I mean, I don't know. The president, this whole, you know, what would it be, ethics within the government, and there's these traditions, and the president shouldn't – the Supreme Court's a respected body. It is a respected body and whatnot, but I don't know. It's not so much that he is saying anything bad about the Supreme Court that gets me. It's just pretty much his stupidity. I mean, if you look at it this way, I think Judge Napolitano has a good, you know, perspective on this. It's like everyone says there shouldn't be any judicial activism, but in reality, everybody just wants their own judicial activism to be the judicial activism.
Right.
I mean, conservatives – I mean, you can try and – I know some conservative talk show hosts would say judicial activism isn't striking down laws. It's creating laws, like Roe versus Wade created a law. And really the way I see it is the Supreme Court's there. They're interpreting the Constitution. They're some, most of the time they tend to be wrong, but if they're right, they're right. Take it. It's good. Judicial activism is never going to go away as long as we have the setup we have, and, you know – Obama saying that there is no, they don't have any authority or any right to make that call is just beyond me. I mean, the dude was a professor of constitutional law. I mean, I don't know. I have no idea. I think he's coming from this to play politics is why. So maybe he isn't stupid. He's just really, really smart and he's playing politics.
Well, is judicial review isn't found in the Constitution?
It's not found.
Do you think the court has that power?
By the way it's set up, it's implicit, yes.
A lot of it was based on Marbury versus Madison.
And that's just an example of the court giving themselves more power. We don't like it when the president gives themselves more power or the Congress gives themselves more power. But
would you guys agree that Obamacare, as we understand it, is unconstitutional?
Correct.
Creighton?
Yeah.
Okay, I agree with that. So the Supreme Court, obviously, if they rule that this is unconstitutional and strike down this law, then we're going to be in favor of that. I mean, is it judicial activism when the Congress and the president have gone so far beyond the Constitution that when a body actually says, actually, no, we do have laws that are written down and they should be followed? How is that judicial activism? Yeah. Isn't that exactly the point? They're there to limit the powers of the other two branches.
It's like the idea of Ron Paul getting elected and not being able to do anything.
Here's sort of the public favoring. Part of the reason that people have a problem with Obama speaking out against the court, I mean, one branch criticizing another branch, you could look at that and you could say, well, what's the big deal? Some people would argue that the Supreme Court is the last part of the federal government that people have any faith in, and that's eroding. Over the last 2 years, they've had a 15-point decline in faith in the Supreme Court. It's gone from 61% to 46% in public approval since the mid-2009, but that's still significantly higher than Congress's single-digit approval rating. And so they're sort of the last bastion of respect that the American people have for their federal government. Right. And there are several commentators who are worried that if the president makes a campaign issue out of the Supreme Court, that it's going to start to erode faith in the court, and then people will have absolutely zero faith in their government whatsoever.
I have zero faith in my government whatsoever. Already. I mean, where was the Supreme Court during the Patriot Act?
Right.
I mean, look at things they've ruled on in the last decade.
Look at just
the Kelo case with eminent domain and just seizing land. They said it's fine. I mean, they've progressively been getting worse, in my opinion, with their rulings.
And this week with the strip search, which we can talk about more about later. I don't want to get us off track. But do you guys have a problem? So looking at those two views, that the president can criticize another branch, especially if that branch is going to criticize them, I mean, do you guys have a problem with him making a campaign issue or fighting back against his legislation before it's even ruled on? I mean, trying to influence a court that's supposed to be separate?
I mean, you could say indirectly he's influencing them because his team's the one doing the arguing for Obamacare. Mm-hmm. So I don't really have a problem with it. I think if a judge is a judge and he's going to make a judgment, I mean, I think everybody knows he was talking to Kennedy. And he's trying to – I don't know if he's trying to scare Kennedy or if he's trying to just be like – make a passionate statement and, you know, use some emotion to get Kennedy on. I don't know what he's trying to do. I really don't have a problem with him criticizing the court. I find all the little respectability things about any branch of government, I find all that stuff like trivial. It doesn't really bother me. But I just say I don't know. What my thing is that this guy is the president of the United States. He is a government official. He was a professor of constitutional law
at Harvard,
and he just said one of the dumbest comments that a president may have ever said, and that either speaks very ill of Harvard and our government, very ill of him, or he's just really smart and he's playing politics and he's trying to get some demographic on his side.
I'm not sure it's that. I wouldn't describe it as dumb. I just think that's the direction the country's moving. As president, Obama doesn't see any limits to his power. He was elected, and he can do whatever he thinks is best for the country. That's how he feels about it. So if he passed a law as president, is elected by the people, I don't think that's a stupid comment. I just think that's the direction that progressives are moving. So that's fact to them. It's not stupid.
Do you think that he is setting up a fight that he might ignore the Supreme Court?
Oh, yeah. If they rule it's unconstitutional, I think it'll happen anyway.
Here's the nerdy history fact of the week, since we have to have one. I did some research for the show, for the first show. This is our fifth show, and we finally did some research for the show, so hopefully it shines through. But only one president has ever ignored a Supreme Court order. It was in 1830, and Andrew Jackson, one of the founding pillars of the Democratic Party, had signed the Indian Removal Act of 1830. The Democrats were pretty rattled that the heathens had prospered, especially the five civilized tribes. And the Trail of Tears was born, and that's when the president moved the five tribes, the Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Muscogee, Creek, and Seminole, to reservations. And that started a significant fight. You know, there's also several significant fights over history. The New Deal fight, we talked about that last week, where the New Deal was being ruled unconstitutional. And so the president fought back, FDR, and said, well, I'm just going to make 15 Supreme Court justices and change the way the court is made up.
Yeah.
And then that led to, obviously, him being called a dictator. There was also Nixon. The Supreme Court ruled he had to have the tapes released. There was also Bush v. Gore. So an activist court and a fight between the executive and the Supreme Court branches is not necessarily something new. I don't personally think he would just ignore the Supreme Court. He may kick and scream and whine, but I couldn't imagine him just moving forward. I mean, you want to talk about impeachment processes? That would be
huge. I don't see him doing that either. This issue's too, it's too big. It's too. I mean, the Republicans would just tear him apart. I mean, that House would the next day they'd drop impeachment charges on him. I mean, it's a Republican controlled House. I mean, it would not be within, you know, a week if he, after he did anything, they would start doing it.
I think it'd be hours.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine. I mean, you want to talk about Clinton's second term and the impeachment process there. This would be the, it would just be total gridlock.
I would love it.
It'd be nice. It'd be nice.
It would be so great. Nothing would get done.
I mean, there would be a 0% approval rating, and we'd be floating into disastrous territory as a country.
Well, we already are.
Well, I know, and as libertarians, I know we're preaching to the choir here, but that's sort of the point of the podcast at large. But
right,
you know,
yeah. I mean, I always use the metaphor that it's like if you're falling off of a cliff. It feels nice. The wind's blowing through your hair. It's like it's a cool sensation, but the ground's coming up pretty quick, and we're at the point where we're falling off the cliff, and we haven't hit the ground yet. The ground's coming up pretty fast.
So we already see our government unhinged. You see the court this week ruling that strip searches are okay and granting more power.
So we were talking about activism, judicial activism,
yeah,
and how it might work out in our favor here for Obamacare, mm-hmm, if it gets stricken down. And you guys think that that's all right that they're doing that because it's in our favor, we shouldn't complain about it.
I'm saying that the Supreme Court exists to rule things unconstitutional. They're there to limit the power of the other two branches.
I think they're there to state-by-state conflicts and...
Yeah, but how do they do that? How do they do that, though? You're implying that judicial review is a usurpation.
One at a time, boys. One at a time.
You're implying that judicial review is a usurpation. That's what you're saying. That they usurped power by judicial review, but they didn't. It's implicit because if you even let's just say it is between two states, they have to rule based upon some framework, and that framework is the Constitution. And based upon how they interpret that document is how they're going to rule. And that is how the judicial review. You don't strike down. It's not like they say, you know, we have authority to say that you can't make this law. They're saying that this law is unconstitutional, and according to the Constitution, if it's unconstitutional, it's not a law. And that's what they're doing.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they did it between the states and the feds or between two states. It would still happen. It's just it emerged from people's understanding of how the legal process works. It's not like John Marshall said, I'm going to create a new power today. He said, this is how we're interpreting it, and since we are the Supreme Court, our interpretation of the document is how it is officially declared.
That interpretation should not be final.
It isn't final.
It isn't
final. because another court can reinterpret it.
But there's no court higher.
Supreme Court.
But you could go in and they could
change precedent.
The legislative branch can then go in and amend or change the law to make it constitutional.
Right, but what I'm saying is it's the people that decide the final say in what is constitutional.
It's the people who have the decision
not
in any
not
government.
The Supreme Court. Supreme Court can say their opinion, but that shouldn't be final.
Any government, the people are the ones that make the final decision.
No. All,
I mean, in Robert
anything that's not in the Constitution is held to the states and the people, respectively.
Yes.
Not the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court's not is the they're interpreting what is in
new
the law.
Laws that aren't in the Constitution.
You're talking about creating law. There's a difference between striking down a law that's already been written by or passed by Congress and signed by the president. It's an interpretation of what the Constitution says. Now, yes, the Supreme Court can make a bad call, and I'm not saying the Supreme Court should have the final say. I think that's where nullification can come in. But to say that judicial review is like a usurpation is just – it's a misunderstanding of how the legal process is. I mean, there's a difference between saying we're going to create a new law because we're the Supreme Court and then saying – or in between that and saying that – this is unconstitutional because the Constitution says X and this does Y, therefore you can't do it.
I don't think they created any new law.
So are you saying, yeah, I mean,
I was saying like that the president now has the power to detain an American. That's not a new law. It's just that's a horrible example. All right.
So are you saying that the Supreme Court.
At his discretion, he can bomb Libya whenever he wants because he's the president. The Supreme Court's saying no matter what the law is, we can decide if it's constitutional or not, and that's the end. What we say is law.
No.
Whatever we say, it determines if something is valid or not.
So are you saying
we are the end of all means.
So are you saying that the Supreme Court...
No, I just said there are other ways you could go about it, but on a federal level...
If they say Obamacare is fine, 5-4, then what can you do about it?
What can the people do about it?
Nothing.
that, well, I mean, in a strictly government sense, they can elect new people that can pass a repeal law. I'm not talking about practicality here, but as far as specific, like, what would in theory be possible, they could elect new representatives that would pass a law repealing Obamacare. But practically, yes, that probably wouldn't happen. What you're complaining about is basically the inadequacy of government, not just the inadequacy of one particular part of our government. And I think that's something a lot of libertarians understand. And rather, I mean, if we're going to talk about how the Supreme Court works and rather how we would like some government that doesn't exist to work, I mean, we're never going to come to an agreement. I don't like the Supreme Court made a lot of stupid decisions. I think Wicker B. Filburn was one of the stupidest decisions in the history of mankind.
All right, so maybe that's the second nerdy fact of the week. What does that mean?
Wicker B. Filburn was during the New Deal era. It was a decision. Basically, they put caps on how much wheat you could grow and sell, or actually how much wheat you could sell. And this guy grew his cap, but he grew past his cap because he was using it to feed his own cattle. He wasn't trying to sell the extra. He was just feeding his cattle with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he got fined, and he went to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court said that because he grew that wheat to feed his cattle, he would have bought the wheat from somebody else had he not grown it. And since that other person could have been from a different state, it went across state. It is interstate commerce, and therefore it was just it vastly increased the Commerce Clause interpretation.
Sure. Which is sort of why we're at this point now with Obamacare. Yeah. So are you saying, Galt, that the Supreme Court shouldn't have heard this at all?
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying.
Okay, so what is our recourse for a law that is that we find is unconstitutional?
Well, they can hear it once it's affected someone. The law has taxed someone or made someone pay for something and then they can file suit against the federal government or the state can. They were set up to resolve conflicts between states and other states or states and the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they're doing in this case. It's the states that have sued
but
the federal
nothing
government.
Nothing has happened to the state yet.
Yes, the states
yes,
have actually
the
changed.
States have
they've
actually,
had to change their policy. And
but
to
change,
prepare
they
for
don't
the,
have to change policy.
They do.
They're not forced to change policy
were.
Right now. That's their choice to change policy.
The federal government has the ultimate authority,
right.
According to the
okay,
to,
fine.
What
but
amendment
the
is
the federal
Creighton?
Government, nothing from Obamacare has went into effect yet.
Yes.
Nothing.
Certain
no.
portions have gone into effect. I promise you. I don't have the fact looked up, but there are stages to the implementation. There are certain things like Hoosier Helper, for example, that no longer exists in Indiana because it was canceled the next day
okay.
because certain portions
but,
of the law went
but
into
that's
effect.
That's not because Obamacare said you have to end this program. That was because our state government said, well, there's no need anymore. Let's just stop
that's
it.
Still, but that's still the effect of the federal government
that
infringing
is,
on
but
the—
but that's not an effect of the law.
It is. The
no.
law passed. The states had to, in order to prepare for the law, they had to change their policy.
They didn't have
if
to.
If that law had not passed, yes, they
no,
did have to change it.
We did not have to end the Hoosier Helper program.
You did because there are certain ways you have to do you didn't have to, but if you want federal government money,
right.
you have to.
But so then—
into the mic.
You guys.
Now, is that you admitting defeat?
No, it's not because a mandate is not forcing someone to do something. Okay.
Actually, that is exactly what a mandate is.
No, because you have the option. It's an individual mandate. So they say it's forcing people to buy it, but actually, you don't have to.
Or you have to pay a fine. Eventually, you'll have to pay a fine. Certain portions of the law. This is a 1,000-page bill.
The minute they send you the fine, that's the minute you sue the federal government.
But what we're saying is
that fine has not come to you yet, so you have not been affected by that
because
law.
That portion has not yet gone into effect. But there are other portions of the law that have gone into effect that change the way that Medicare is paid out, that changes the regulations on the states on how they can do Medicare and Medicaid. Certain things have gone into effect. Like, for instance, if you are 26 and under, you can currently get insurance
yes,
through your parents' providers.
That is absolutely true.
That is one thing that's already in effect.
That was one of the selling points of the whole legislation.
And that's not what's being—
the individual mandate—
what's being brought to the court.
It's part of the bill.
It's okay. The entire bill has.
You guys are not even arguing what the plaintiffs are arguing in the court case. They're not arguing that. Oh, they changed the rules, so now people under 26 can get health insurance.
Are you afraid? Are you afraid that the Supreme Court's going to be another branch of government making and breaking law at a more rapid rate? Like the only thing stopping the Supreme Court from being like a tyrannical body of 9 people was that they couldn't rule on anything until somebody sued somebody because they were affected by it. I mean, the Supreme Court is not going to be this usurper of power and totally rule over the country.
Oh, they're already talking about how. Being active about his birth certificate now. They're bringing that all back up. Donald Trump's birther movement. The Supreme Court said something about it last week or earlier this week about how there are questions about Obama's birth certificate. That has nothing to do with the Supreme Court at all.
Let's talk about what the actual questions in the case are. So let's get down to that. That might help clarify some stuff for us. So I pulled up Florida on my iPad, Galt.
Oh, cool.
he's an Android person.
I'm using my Nexus.
He's an Android nerd. So I pulled up on the iPad here, Florida v. Department of Health and Human Services. That's the actual case. So if you want to go to supremecourt.gov, you can look it all up. And these are the questions that were presented that the Supreme Court is deciding on. They were sued by the state's attorney generals. And base them on these questions. Number one, does Congress exceed its enumerated powers and violate basic principles of federalism when it coerces states into accepting onerous conditions that it could not impose directly by threatening to withhold all federal funding under the single largest grant in aid program? Or does the limitation on Congress's spending power that this court recognized in South Dakota versus Dole no longer apply? Number two, may Congress treat states no differently from any other employer when imposing invasive mandates as to the manner in which they provide their own employees with insurance coverage, as suggested by Garcia versus San Antonio Metropolitan Transit Authority, or has Garcia's approach been overtaken by subsequent cases in which this court has explicitly recognized judicially enforceable limits on Congress's power to interfere with state sovereignty? Number three, does the Affordable Care Act's mandate that virtually every individual obtain health insurance exceed Congress's enumerated powers? And if so, to what extent, if any, can the mandate be severed from the remainder of the act? So the number one sort of the sticker here is, does Congress exceed its enumerated powers that violate the basic principles of federalism when it coerces states into accepting onerous conditions that it could not impose directly by threatening to withhold funds? So that's exactly what we've been saying. The states are suing because they're threatening, they're exceeding their authority, the federal government, on the state governments by threatening to withhold Medicare and Medicaid funds if they don't comply, similar to what we've talked about in the past with the drinking age. It's 21 everywhere, not because the federal government can pass a law mandating that drinking laws are 21 in the entire nation. They don't have that authority. But so what they did is they withheld highway funds. And that's what they're saying. You comply with this law as a state government, or we're going to withhold your funds. So that's the crux of the case. It's not a person who is going to jail because they haven't paid for something yet. It's the state governments who created the federal government saying, you're getting too big and too powerful. And so the state government is asking – the state governments are asking the federal government's Supreme Court to rule on whether or not the federal government has that power over the Supreme Court. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I understood that it was a state suing the federal government.
Right.
But one of those three questions were also about the individual mandate. So – with the first question.
Now, here it says on question three, okay, granted limited to the issue of severability presented by question three of the petition. In my non-lawyer college dropout thought process here, granted, even though they haven't presented someone who has been harmed by question three. Maybe I'm totally wrong. If I'm wrong about that, please correct us on the Facebook page by going to wearelibertarians.com and commenting there.
So they haven't yet, but they want the question answered.
Right.
So this doesn't even sound like it has anything to do with Obamacare to me. It sounds like it's just about federal mandates in general.
Because what's already happened is they have started to challenge states like Indiana with Hoosier Helper.
If they rule that way, then can Indiana lower the drinking age and still keep their funds?
Well, that's 40 years ago. I mean, but
they can still change it now, right?
But this is a pretty significant case.
That was the example you used as another mandate. So if healthcare is stricken down with this first question,
right?
That first question will apply to other mandates. Not just Obamacare, or not just the Affordable Healthcare Act.
Things in government aren't retroactive, so you couldn't go back and say, because this happened 40 years ago and we have this new case law, you could go back and sue. You could say, you could change your drinking age to 18 in Indiana.
This is precedent.
And say, yes, because now you're withholding funds from us, because this is how the federal government controls state and local governments all the time. I've personally witnessed it on the Help America Vote Act Commission. The federal government wants to control election laws across the nation, so they created Help America Vote Act, the HAVA Act, and so that's how they control election law across the nation. And it's a $2 million every 3 or 4 years to the states, and then they have to reamend their HAVA plan. So this is pretty common, and if this passes, then this gives states the ability to say, well, in Florida v. Health and Human Services, you said the states – that's encroaching on federalism. You can't have that power anymore. So guess what? You're number one.
I think the fundamental crux of Chris's Galt's argument is that
What is so funny? What are you laughing about?
Nothing, you two ganging up on me, that's all.
Well, it happens when you're wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, well, the fundamental thing...
If you made sense in life, then no one would be mean to you.
We'll just have to see what our other libertarian listeners
think. I think what Chris is arguing is that since this law has not – the mandate at least, let's just stick at the mandate. Since the mandate has not itself directly affected any individual because they have not been forced to pay a fine or buy insurance yet, that the Supreme Court should have no authority on it because there is no grounds to bring up a case against the court. And that if they do go through with this, then the court has taken more power than it was ever intended to have, and now they can just start ruling on laws whether or not they've been a person has addressed a grievance or not, and start striking down laws or creating new laws and essentially become another branch of government that just starts going crazy. Is that essentially what you're trying to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, practically, I don't see that happening at all. It just takes too long for stuff to go through court. There would be so many more if that was what they got out of this. I mean, you'd have decades of cases ready to be heard, and there'd be. I mean, it just would not happen.
Yeah. So I think we've, in true libertarian fashion, we're all right, and we all agree. We just wanted to yell at each other about it.
I don't want any branch of government getting more power than they already have. I think every branch of government has more power than the Constitution.
But this is, in my view, this is the Supreme Court limiting the power of the other two branches. This isn't the Supreme Court taking more power. It's limiting theirs.
His thing is that if the Supreme Court may be limiting the power of Congress now, but in the future they could use that power they just got to infringe on rights
and
stuff.
In the same way with executive orders, if Ron Paul is going to use executive orders to limit government, you're going to be fine with that. But the next president might not. And same thing with the next court.
But
so
however,
pretty split conservatives.
However,
so how do you
barely a little more?
I'm shocked. I'm shocked when people don't agree with me.
But when
you listen to the question of what they're answering, don't you hear the federal government decide? The Supreme Court deciding, okay, the federal government can't take this power. They're not. The Supreme Court is not taking more power. The Supreme Court,
but they
is,
are to me.
No, he's saying that if they make this,
they don't have to.
If
have
they
any,
make this
they
call,
they don't have to have any standing to hear any case they want to hear.
That's what he's saying. He's saying that if they make this call, then they don't have to.
They can hear whatever
they don't have
they
to
want.
Have a case
they can
brought.
Rule on anything.
They don't have to have a case brought upon them by somebody that's been directly affected by a law. They can just start striking down laws or
no,
saying
this
laws.
Is
a,
this
now,
is,
now, the
but
thing
the,
I think
there
that,
are already portions.
No,
don't lose.
No, I got you. I got you.
You're on my side.
Yes,
stop arguing
I got
with
you.
Me.
I'm trying to clarify his argument.
Okay.
What I'm saying. What I would
Good
say
luck.
Though. What I would say though is that it sounds to me like they're asking the question of whether or not they're asking the Supreme Court to give their opinion on whether or not this law you know, would ever be constitutional.
Right.
And they're not. I misheard what you said, but it sounds like they're saying, you know, if, quote, the federal government were to pass a mandate on people and force them to buy health insurance, would that be constitutional?
Right.
And if the Supreme the Supreme Court says no, then that means that this the Obama administration technically has not had the Supreme Court say this law is unconstitutional, but the Obama administration's hands are in a vice because if they pass that, everyone knows what the Supreme Court was talking about, and then the next time that they when they actually do try and implement it, somebody can bring it up and say, well, according to your opinion that you had, you know, a few years ago, you said that a mandate of this type would be unconstitutional. Does this mandate in Obamacare fit this type? And the Supreme Court would obviously say yes, unless they got another justice died and then another liberal justice got in there. And the Supreme Court would say yes, and then the mandate would be struck down.
But the law has already been passed and enacted. And just because the funding mechanism is not yet in place and it rolls out over time, it does not mean that the law hasn't been passed and enacted and enforced. And so that's what I'm saying is that I see where you would think that, but a person – an individual has not yet been harmed, but the law has been passed, and because the entire act has been passed and enacted, the state governments are asking the Supreme Court to rule on whether or not there can be an individual mandate. And of course, the entire media is not talking about question one and two. They're talking about question three. They're not talking about states' rights and enumerated powers. Yes,
you just said that no individual has been affected, and that's why it hasn't been brought up.
But no individual by the mandate has been affected. No one has had to pay the government yet because of the mandate.
What are states made of?
Oh my God!
What are states made of?
Are we going to have a
states are made up of individuals?
I think there's a universe on the head, on the fingernail of
you have an individual has to be affected, or it's not. It hasn't done anything.
But
to
that isn't
yet.
How government works. That isn't how the legal system works. Well, they don't get
Chris,
it down
I know,
to that.
I know what you're trying to say. I don't think
that's how it was meant to work.
Chris, I know what you're trying to say, and
Chris
I think,
Galt, right?
Chris Galt, yeah. I know what you're trying to say, but like I said, I don't think from the way he read what their question is. I don't think they're necessarily, you know, strictly ruling on the mandate at this point in time.
So they're going to rule. If they rule it's unconstitutional, it's not going to have any effect on Obamacare at all.
I think in strict terms, it won't.
Because nothing's happened yet.
They're really
on future pretenses.
But it will.
De jure it would not.
De facto it would. Because.
English.
De jure means by the letter of the law, yes. De facto means, while it may not be by the letter of law, but in all reality, it is affecting it.
Okay.
I mean, look that up. I don't want to explain that. You can look that up on
I know. There may be people in the car, and they're thinking of soup. So let's just make sure we clarify.
But yes. The thing is that just because that – the way I'm looking at it is they can rule their opinions all they want. And if it doesn't strike down any portion of law, they haven't gotten any powers. They haven't exceeded any present power they had. Because if they're technically not ruling on the law, they're ruling on the idea of a mandate in the sense that the mandate in Obamacare is, then they're not ruling on the law. They're ruling on that concept.
Right.
And if the law comes up to the Supreme Court in the future because they enacted the mandate anyway, and the Supreme Court, the lawyers has to ask, is this not exactly kind of what you had in your opinion so long ago? And they could say, yes, it is. And then, boom, it's done. It's unconstitutional. But what I think they're trying – what the lawyers are assuming is that the Obama administration is not that stupid. They're going to pass it, and then they're going to get – it's going to get struck down. And then Obama administration is going to say, while that may not have any strictly legal effect on us, it's pretty much just a matter of time, so we might as well be done with it. Plus, he would just be so – I mean, beyond unpopular – at that point, that he would never get reelected. I mean, it's all about politics, too. Don't forget that.
Right, but what could happen with this is the Supreme Court could take this and they could say, well, we're going to rule on the future that, you know, the president might pass a law that takes all gun rights away.
That's not what's happening. You're living in a fantasy.
No,
that's not what happened.
No.
The law has been passed and enacted.
No, but it hasn't affected any individual at all.
It has affected the state governments to which we pay money to. We pay taxes to state governments, do we not?
So then it has affected us.
Yes.
Individuals.
Right. So then that's why the Supreme Court.
Your argument.
He never
no,
said
I'm
anything
just,
other than that.
I'm making you understand what's going on, and it's very difficult.
I understand what's going on.
No, I understand what Galt's saying. He doesn't see that it has directly affected the individuals of a state. And,
right.
And if they can present an argument that it has directly affected the individuals of the state, then he's okay with it.
But like you just said in your whole thing, they're arguing for something that
may
happen.
That's just what it sounded like with the question they asked. So, I'm not sure. They could be arguing something totally different.
But they could rule on, okay, Obama may take away all gun rights next year. He could say guns are illegal. And the Supreme Court could come in tomorrow, if you use this logic, they could come in tomorrow and say, we're going to rule if Obama would take away all gun rights, is that constitutional?
No, because somebody brought it up to the court.
If the court had more liberals, the court would rule, yes, that would be constitutional. And then Obama would pass the law with ease because the Supreme Court already ruled that it's constitutional. The Supreme Court can't rule on laws before things happen.
But the difference with that is that Obama may pass a law in the future. That's different. This law has already been passed,
but it hasn't done anything yet.
It has done something.
The years are 2013 when everything goes into effect.
It has done something. Just because you personally have not been forced to buy some different insurance, or have been forced to pay a fine, does not mean that an individual in this country has not been directly.
I seriously want to know what the people listening think, because Napolitano agrees with me and not you guys. So he said that, in other words, you can't just ask the court to declare a statute unconstitutional because you think it is. You have to have been harmed by it.
Did he read that? I mean,
that's what he
said. I know we all libertarians have a cult-like following of Napolitano, but he is an entertainer on Fox News.
He's also a former judge.
Right. But he also hypes things up a little bit for Fox News, don't you think?
Well, he said there's a statute that says someone wants to challenge a tax, they have to pay the tax first. And in this case, the health care law says you don't have to buy health insurance. Then the government will extract money from you. Question Napolitano says is the extraction a penalty or is it a tax? And if it's a tax, you have to pay it before you can challenge it.
Question!
But they're not saying it's a tax. They already ruled on that.
The Supreme Court is the question before the Supreme Court is not about the tax that has not yet been paid.
The third question was.
Okay. That was about whether or not they have the powers.
They're not considering the mandate a tax.
Question number three was about the Constitution. Do they have enumerated powers within the Constitution
to
enact this mandate?
To buy something.
Right. That is.
And if they don't buy something, it's a tax.
It's a fine. There's a difference in legal terms.
Okay.
There is a difference.
It says fine.
The Obama administration is setting it up. All right, let's move on. Let's move on to a different topic before we absolutely beat
this.
Well, if it's a fine,
the first day of argument was over whether or not it's a tax, and I'm fairly certain it's not a tax because they talked about that same exact statute you just mentioned, and they said that it does not apply.
Okay, good.
So they must have already said.
Already talked about.
Yeah, that was the first day of argument. Okay. I said that last week too.
All right, so let's move on to the next topic. Let's move on to state politics. Okay, and it deals with the Indiana Supreme Court because something interesting happened this week. As you know, we have a Republican governor, and the governor in Indiana appoints the members of the Supreme Court. And he just replaced the Chief Justice.
Randall Shepard.
And he appointed Mark Massa, who ran for Marion County prosecutor and lost. And just a few hours after Massa was appointed, Frank Sullivan announced that he would be retiring as soon as possible. Now, Frank Sullivan is the former budget director of Evan Bay. So Sullivan is a more liberal-leaning justice. He's a Democratic justice. Now, what's interesting about this is that we're in an election year. And Frank Sullivan could wait 8 months to see if John Gregg, the Democrat, wins
the race for governor.
But instead, he is asking Governor Daniels to appoint his successor. So what do you think that says about the race for governor?
That he'd rather have Daniels pick the new justice than Pence.
Because he doesn't think the Democrat's going to win.
Just the Democrat, yeah. And I mean, the Indy Star had a great article about Rupert a couple of days ago.
Matt Tully's article about
Matt
Rupert.
Tully.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, I know Democrats just have a hard time in Indiana for governor.
Mm-hmm.
They really do. On the national stage, people look at Indiana, and the first two people that come to their head are Mitch Daniels and Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so It'll be tough for anybody to beat Mike Pence for governor, even Rupert, even Greg. So I think that's interesting that he wouldn't even wait to even see.
He's not even waiting to see.
Or he just doesn't care anymore.
he woke up. He's like, screw this. I'm done.
I don't know. Or maybe the Democrats think that, you know, Mitch Daniels is more moderate than Mike Pence is.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's more.
And I don't think
in the center now because he's ending his term and he's, you know.
And I don't think there's any question that you're going to get probably more moderation and judicial flexibility from Mitch Daniels, especially on social issues, than you would from Mike Pence.
Right.
You know, I mean, from.
Yeah.
I'll just stop there. But because I know too much.
Unless it's a smoking ban.
Yeah.
Mitch Daniels will sign it.
Yeah. There are. I mean, but there also is. You know, conservatives don't have a great record on certain things that libertarians. I mean, the Foster case this week that came out was appalling. And if you don't know anything about the Foster case that came out in the Supreme Court, which basically it's the strip search case. Do you know kind of a summary of it?
I know a little bit, isn't it? Strip searches, but it's in prisons, right?
I'm not sure, but
I think it has something to do with prison. I haven't read very much on it, but I don't think it's like a general strip search, like if you get pulled over or something. I think it's like for inmates when they're coming in or something. I don't know exactly.
Is it inmates or even if you have to spend the night there?
I don't know. I'm fairly certain it's not like every
You're
single.
Why are you trying to get arrested?
No, if you like detained for the night,
Galt's looking to get lucky.
I don't know. I'm fairly certain it's not like a super general thing. I mean, it's still pretty screwed up.
Is that really screwed up to strip search inmates?
Well, I mean,
I think they already do that.
Are you implying that all inmates are inherently like, you know, not worthy of rights? Because I know there's there's a lot of people in prisons that are in prison because of stupid laws.
Well. Honestly, we don't have time to debate the perfect scenario for the justice system here.
So this week, Obama, like we said, Obama's had a rough week. He, on top of his Supreme Court comment, he said about Paul Ryan's budget that he called it social Darwinism, which for those who don't know, social Darwinism is essentially an 1800s idea that the poor and the weak and all those who can't help themselves should just die off, like in evolutionary terms.
The strongest will survive.
Yeah, and all this stuff. And it was just a term used basically to – I mean, I think it was actually created by those who support the idea, but it morphed into – an attack phrase used against those who don't want the government to do stuff.
Right. It creates imagery that conservatives and libertarians want anyone who is poor or downtrodden or a minority or anyone who is having a tough time in society, that conservatives and libertarians just want those people to go away and die, and that we have absolutely zero compassion for anyone who may be struggling in life.
And, you know, to those who are Ayn Randians, I can kind of see where they're coming from.
You're not helping. We're trying to establish the fact that we do care about people. And you're like, listen, Ayn Rand did say that everyone should die, so maybe Obama has a point.
No. Ayn Rand, for those who are listening, Ayn Randers, I understand Ayn Rand was not like that. I'm just making a joke. But anyway, the point is that he used this about Paul Ryan's budget as if it was like some radical step into decreasing government funding for all this stuff and like – You look at it and you're kind of just like, what the heck is he talking about?
And isn't his budget, Paul Ryan's budget, only like $1 trillion
if
less?
It's all from like, I'm pretty sure it's all from future spending.
Right.
I don't think it cuts a dime. Like, it won't decrease the level of spending at all.
Did you guys see the comic? With the, it's like the water is come gushing out of the pipe and then the elephant and the donkey are drowning. And then donkey's saying, I want to decrease the water by one drop. And the elephant says, I want to decrease it by two.
Yeah.
Post that. We'll post that on WeAreLibertarians.com. Yeah.
But I mean, that's essentially what's going on. Obama's calling Paul Ryan's budget social Darwinism because he cuts he was proposing a reduced spending amount of $1 trillion more than Obama did. And apparently that means the government's going to shut down and that poor people will be thrown onto the street and they won't have people to protect your meat and your food and you're all going to die and it's going to be hell on earth and the world will end.
And Van Jones started this week too.
Like, yeah, and then on top of that, Van Jones, who was the, I believe, the environmental...
He was the green czar.
The green czar, green job czar for Obama back when he first got...
Glenn Beck.
Yeah, Glenn Beck basically destroyed his career. But he's pretty radical. I mean, absent Glenn Beck, to pretty much anyone who's a liberal is radical to Glenn Beck. But this guy actually is pretty crazy. But...
It's basically green socialism. It's building an economy built on...
He's an avowed communist and all this kind of stuff. But he was quoted in saying that that libertarians are anti-gay, they're racist, and all this kind of stuff. And there's an interesting thing on The Five, which is weird because Fox News actually gave like libertarians some love. But... they're talking about how
libertarian ratings dropped. Like,
yeah, because but they were saying
month.
They're like, who the heck is Van Jones talking about? Libertarians have one of the best track records on gay rights and their anti-racism and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, Van Jones must be saying that because he sees Glenn Beck as a libertarian and Glenn Beck might believe these things. Therefore, libertarians believe these things, even though Glenn Beck is really not a libertarian. But I mean, it's just been an interesting week for liberals, and it kind of shows how little the other sides, I say sides, understand the libertarian philosophy. I mean, and that's a big problem that I've come across in my just talking in general. It's like, I don't understand. I can't really wrap my head around it. If you say you don't want the government to do something, that means you don't want it done. And that is one of the It irks me so much when people use that argument. And, I mean, the left uses it a lot, but the right uses it too.
Sure.
And I don't know. What do you guys think? I don't know.
If on the right, it's, libertarians don't want an active military. They just want us to get attacked and bombed and be limp-wristed. And that's not – I mean, if somebody invaded South Carolina, then we certainly would be going to defend ourselves and just like we did with the – not the Taliban, but Al-Qaeda – now we're just fighting the Taliban, and that's what we have a problem with. With liberals, you know, they think that – because I hear Republicans say it all the time, every time I meet a Republican, they say, oh, yeah, I'm a libertarian. And then they are like, well, I'm a libertarian, but I think all the oil in Iran belongs to us. Like, well, that makes you not a libertarian because we don't believe that we own other people's resources. Oh, well, then you guys are just wrong, you know. And so I think because they say that, then liberals think they have this view that we are cold-hearted bastards, that we just want to get rid of anybody, that it is social Darwinism. But that's not how it works. I mean, people, if you give money to a charity, then you follow your money. You invest in an organization, and then you have an interest in making sure that organization grows. And you give more of your money and your time and effort, and it makes the organization stronger and you better. And when the government does charity, then the government is lax in its ability. It's a 9-to-5 job for the person who is running the charity. And that's why you see problems with FSSA. It doesn't make private charity perfect, but it does mean that it's just a different worldview. And sometimes we have a problem communicating that to liberals, especially – I mean – As our gubernatorial candidate, Rupert, has reached out to LGBT groups, some of them are kind of hostile to us initially because they think that we are anti-LGBT rights, that we agree with Rick Santorum 100% of the time, and that couldn't be further from the truth. The Libertarian Party of Indiana is the only political party that spoke out against SJR 13, which put discrimination into the Constitution and said that marriage is only between a man and a woman. And we were the only ones to speak out against that. And when you tell that to some of these groups, they're like, oh, okay. It's just a lack of awareness. And, you know, it's getting better.
It is getting better. I like what Gary Johnson said on Colbert Report.
Sure.
It's the old parties.
Right.
They're the old parties now.
Yeah.
We're coming up.
To Penn Jillette, who... I mean, a Penn and Teller. Mm-hmm. He has a really, really good quote as far as I think the moral side of government, you know, spending on the poor. I mean, there are those that would say that, you know, we're not against it because we're not compassionate. We just think the government doesn't do it well, or that the private charities won't do it well enough, or whatever. Your arguments are just inefficiency, utilitarianism, whatnot. But Penn Jillette has a good one on, like, the moral of government providing charity. And it's a really good quote. It says, "It's amazing to me how many people think that voting to have the government give poor people money is compassion. Helping poor and suffering people yourself is compassion. Voting for our government to use guns to give money to people to help poor and suffering people is immoral, self-righteous, bullying laziness. People need to be fed, medicated, educated, clothed, and sheltered. If we're compassionate, we'll help them. But you get no moral credit for forcing other people to do what you think is right. There's great joy in helping people, but no joy in doing it at gunpoint."
Yep.
And that's I think that's a good – that's a sufficient – example we're saying, because I mean it's something I say all the time. People talk about how the government needs to do this and the government needs to do that, and it's like, well, every time — I think Tom Woods had it said in one of his speeches, like, every time you hear people on TV say just do this at your house, and the next time you're watching Fox News or MSNBC or CNN or whatever your particular poison is, the next time they're saying the government needs to do this or the government needs to do that, every time they say the government needs to do X, say they need to do X, and then add at the end with a gun. Because everything the government does, they do at gunpoint, whether it be direct or whether it be implicit, it be threat of violence. Government is force. It is nothing more. It is nothing less. It is forced by the majority. It is forced by an oligarchy. It is forced by a king. It is, but any other time, it is force. And there, and to say that, you know, you don't like the poor people of America, if you don't want the government to provide poor people with money, then you're not compassionate, that is just such a stupid argument, because what you're saying is you aren't compassionate because you don't want to put guns to other people's heads and take their money and give it to another person who's poor.
Well, right on,
great,
man.
I'm glad we got to argue most of the podcast, and I finally get to agree with you at the end.
Yeah.
Government is force.
So, all right, we got to wrap up. So what is on – let's talk about upcoming events. For the Libertarian Party of Indiana, we've got a poker tournament this Saturday. So if you want to know more about the poker tournament, if you're a card player, we've got two games, one at 3 and one at 7. The one at 3 is probably a little bit – if you're a college student especially, I think it's a $25 buy-in. The one at 7 is a $100 buy-in. So check that out at lpin.org/poker. So what's coming up around the state on college campuses?
Tom Woods on the 21st. We've talked about every week.
Yep, that's coming up real quick. And then next,
we're going to have a state convention. The Young Americans for Liberty State Convention is coming up pretty soon.
Didn't you guys just have one like 2 months ago?
No, we had tried to have one every semester.
Wow. Yeah,
we had one last semester.
That one's still in flux, so we're not quoting any dates on that.
But dropped your mic.
You just dropped your microphone.
Yeah, but we'll let you guys know when we get all that worked out. But it's coming up soon.
2 weeks now? Or is it 1 week?
2 weeks.
2 weeks from now is the, on IUPUI, Young Americans for Liberty, is the Week of Liberty, which for those that are in the Indianapolis area, I really encourage you to come because it's going to be a lot of fun. The first 2 days are going to be what's called Occupy the Honor Roll, which is basically just us making fun of the Occupy movement. We're going to go around.
That's a great way to reach out to the people who may agree with you.
Yeah, we're going to go around and have a petition and just basically tabling and all stuff on campus.
Redistribute
the GPA. We're going to say people don't need a 4.0, so why don't you share some of your 4.0 and just basically mock the redistribution.
I could have used that when I was in school.
But yeah. So we're gonna do that, and then 2 days after that is going to be, it's called the
Reality
Check Quiz Show. And what it essentially is, it's like we're going to basically ask all the, you know, people walking by, and we're going to have an actual game show, hopefully. But it's just going to be, you know, who is Snooki? What is, you know, what's the new show on MTV? Who's Lady Gaga's newest, whatever, just some sort of pop culture question that everyone's going to know. And they'll get all those questions right. And then we'll ask them, you know, what does the Federal Reserve do? When's the last time we declared war? Really important questions about our government, and just watch how everybody bombs those questions. And we'll get that on tape.
Sounds
and
like a great way to reach out to people by insulting them.
Yes.
So, well, maybe we'll wake up some people.
Hey, you should join our party because you're stupid.
But it's going to be fun. I encourage anyone who's listening and wants to come out, that's the April 16th to that Friday.
Thursday or Friday, we're going to show a video. about knowing your rights with police officers and the TSA and stuff. So
yeah,
that'll
yeah.
be open as well that anybody can come to, and
we'll post the links for all of this stuff in the show notes at podcast.lpin.org or on the Facebook page. So. By the way, if you are not friends with Chris Gault on Facebook, please go check out what I just wrote on his wall.
What?
Guess you shouldn't have let me use your phone for music.
My phone. Sorry that you had to use my phone for music because yours didn't work.
I hate you guys.
Android. Right.
Wrap us up, Creighton.
Well, make sure you make it out to... Every time you tell me to wrap up, you just give it a look and start laughing. Like, is he going to bomb? Is he going to say something stupid?
He's anxious because he wants to see what I wrote, but I can't because I'm playing music.
Play the music.
All right, well, we'll see you next week. And like we say it every week, make sure we record this around 12:30 or 1 o'clock each Thursday. Go on our Facebook page and write some comments, ask some questions, because we'll answer them if you write them. 12:30, 1 o'clock, we'll start answering them. So... see you next week.
All right, thanks.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians, a weekly podcast with myself, Creighton Harrington, and... At my right across from me is Chris Spangle, and to my left is Chris Gault.
Creighton. Let's be a little more exciting.
Yeah.
I'm here today, and I hate my life. I am wearing all black.
Welcome to Funeral Directors Today.
I actually put on my eyeshadow this morning.
This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.